Welcome to another episode of Hurdle. Emily here. Exciting week for the podcast, actually. I'm taking this thing international. Heading to London to record an episode with a guest that I think might just blow your mind. It's actually the first of a few different guests I'm going to wrangle during the next few weeks of travel, which will bring me to London, then to Colorado, then to Los Angeles. And I'll probably be a little tired when it's all said and done, but I think it's safe to say you guys are going to love the content that comes out of all of it. Quick shout out to the sponsor of today's episode, Altra. I've been getting some really great feedback from the listeners buying their first pair of Altras, including a tidbit from a friend of mine that made me laugh out loud. Referencing their foot-shaped toe box, he said, "My toes have so much room to breathe. I don't think I'll ever be able to go back to my old sneakers." Check them out for yourself. Visit ultrarunning.com. That's A-L-T-R-A running.com. In today's episode of Hurdle, I'm chatting with the one and only Liz Plosser. I can't say enough good things about this fantastic woman. She's the editor-in-chief of Women's Health magazine, a mega mentor to me, and a really good friend. We were catching up over dinner a few weeks back, as friends do, and I was just so over the moon flattered when she said that she'd have a Hurdle moment she'd love to share for the pod. In today's episode, Liz talks about how when her and her husband had a tough time conceiving, she wondered if running and exercise could be to blame. Spoiler, they now have three beautiful, beautiful kids. We also chat about what it's like to be at the helm of Women's Health magazine, the lessons that running has taught her over the years, and she offers some big time career advice that you definitely don't want to miss out on. Quick call out, if you haven't done so yet, please, please, please head on over to the iTunes store and leave a quick review for Hurdle. Tell me what you like. I'd love to hear about it. Also, any questions, concerns, feel free to shoot me an email, emily@hurdle.us, and make sure you're following the podcast at Hurdle Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. With that, let's get to hurdling. Today, I am sitting here with Liz Plosser. She's the editor-in-chief of Women's Health magazine. Hey, Liz.
Hi, Emily.
This is so special.
I feel the same way. I'm so happy to be here with you.
Fun fact, Liz used to be my boss at my last full-time job. We were both at Self. And since then, she's done so many things.
So many things.
A whirlwind of the past year and a half, but all great things.
Thanks, Em.
I'd love to get started here today. Just talk to me about what it's like to join the team at Women's Health. This is a new thing for you.
Yeah. So I've been editor-in-chief since late January, and I'm literally living a dream job. I pinch myself every morning. It's the best job in the world. And I have to say, I guess it's been a little over 3 months. It's gone by like in a blink of an eye so quickly.
I can't even imagine. And walking into that building, if you've never been to Hearst Tower, it's right near Columbus Circle, and it is exactly what they show you in, like, The Devil's Wear Prada.
Yeah, it's like every TV show or movie come to life. It's a beautiful building and place to work.
So, Liz, why don't we jump right into it? I know I met you at Self, but you had quite the extensive career before that, and actually, it didn't start in magazines. So tell me a little bit about your background and how you found yourself in this journalistic space.
Sure. Okay, I'll try to give you the turbo version.
Turbo version.
Okay. My first job out of college was actually in investment banking. I was an analyst.
Were you a investment? Were you a banking? Do people finance major? I was about to say a banking major.
I was not a banking major or a finance major. I did take some economics classes in college, so it had always business and economics had always been an interest of mine. But I was an English major, so it was definitely a bit of a pivot to go in that direction. But it was kind of my ticket to New York City. The banks and consulting firms kind of descend upon campus, and one interview led to another, and suddenly I had a job offer and was like, yeah, I'll give this a shot.
And where were you growing up?
I grew up in the Midwest, in Kansas City. I went to college in New Jersey, and everyone kind of migrates to New York City.
And so you land in New York City and you're in investment banking. And what is that climate like? Because I pretty much envision it exactly to be like Wolf of Wall Street.
Fortunately, it was not like that, at least not the side of it I saw. You know, I was lowest woman on the totem pole. As an analyst, you're kind of the person putting together spreadsheets and making the presentations and doing all the work that gets dropped on your desk, you know, at like 7:30 when the higher up bankers head home for the evening. It was intense. It was really long hours. And I'm really not afraid of that. And I was like young and energetic, but I wasn't passionate about it. And when you're working so late and so long and hard on something that you doesn't like fire you up, I knew pretty quickly that it was not going to be my like career passion.
So when does investment banking turn into not investment banking?
So I was there almost 2 years, probably close to the 1 year mark when I was very actively looking to make a transition.
Okay. And the transition is to do?
Is to go into journalism and magazines. And my first job in publishing was at Self Magazine as an editorial assistant.
And when you went in there, because I know it's interesting, obviously in college, did you have any internships?
No.
So interesting how times have changed.
I could never get this job today.
Exactly. I remember going in for my first internship at Fitness Magazine. I had no previous editorial experience. And in retrospect now, if someone was trying to get an internship, RIP Fitness Magazine, but maybe even at Women's Health Magazine, it's pretty likely they have 2-3 past internships before they show up at your door.
I know, 100%. It's a different time now, but also I must say my stars aligned for me to get that role. Once I knew that I needed to leave banking and do something else, I just committed myself to talking to anybody and everybody under the sun about what their career was, what they liked about it, didn't like about it. I had an inkling that magazines and journalism were the right path for me. I mean, I've been an obsessive magazine reader since I was literally like 12 years old when I used to read 17. Yeah, it was like one lucky conversation that led to another one that I got in front of Lucy Danziger, the editor-in-chief of Self. And she really took a gamble on me. She, you know, I walked in my like little pinstripe banking suit and I had a lot of fire and passion, and I was clearly a super fan of the brand, but she went out on a limb to see something in me and to think that I could make that jump.
When you're saying this, it makes me think about how when I walked into your office with absolutely no magazine experience, granted, I've had 7-8 years of a digital background, but I walked into Self Magazine for a print role and I looked at Liz and I was like, I can do this. And she looked at me and she like kind of believed me.
I did believe you. I remember when we were emailing when I wanted you to come in to interview for the job and you were awesome. You were like, I can be there in like 20 minutes, but just a heads up, I will be in athleisure. I was like, I love this girl. She is perfect.
You were like you can come tomorrow.
Yeah, you basically already had the job at that point. I'm like, say no more.
Oh, man. My whole life is spent in athleisure. You start working itself. It's amazing. And it's also around this time, you said you grew up active, but you really started to take on a new appreciation for running. Is that right?
Yeah, I would say the new appreciation for running kind of happened in like a bit of a hurdle moment in my life, which was when I was not so happy in my investment banking role. I was a bit lost. And like, what do you do when you're lost and don't know what's happening in your life and feel kind of like you don't have control of things? You sign up for a marathon, apparently. At least that's what I do in my life. So, yeah, I'd grown up playing soccer and tennis and basketball and was very sporty and athletic. But running had always been like the worst part of any sports practice. Like, I really did not love it. So it's kind of funny that running has been had such an impact in my life. But you get to New York and like it's hard to join a soccer league or, you know, find those teammates. So I discovered that you could sign up for this thing called Team and Training, where you could run with a group of people. And yeah, I signed up for a marathon while I was really unhappy in my job and made some amazing friends, just, you know, like showed up to Central Park and started running with all these strangers, some of whom are still my best friends. And like really worked through some things on those long runs with these strangers who became my friends.
And Team and Training, there's a charitable aspect to that as well, correct?
Yes. And that actually, there's a charitable aspect. You have to raise a certain amount of money. The cool thing about being in investment banking is when I told my coworkers that I was running my first marathon, they were like, here's tons of money, to the point that like my friends and team in training hadn't reached their fundraising goals. And I was like, oh, you can have some of mine. I have like $20,000 extra dollars beyond my training goal.
Oh, my God. Because I know, I think.
Which is a cool thing.
I forget what the threshold is for New York now, but it's not. It's I want to say it's $4,000, $5,000, $6,000.
Mine, I was running the Vermont City Marathon. And because there was travel involved and all of that, I think it was like $3,500. It was not pennies. You know, it's a big deal.
And I mean, it goes to a good cause. So that's
totally
good.
Yeah.
So talk to me about your first marathon. That must have been such an epic moment for you.
Yeah. So it was in Vermont. It was an amazing day. It was, you know, I've never had so much adrenaline pumping through my body. I was so excited for it. I couldn't sleep for like the 3 nights leading up to it. And it was really hard. But I think every picture that you have of me from that day, I am like smiling ear to ear, like so happy. And I remember just my legs were as they, you know, as it happens, the final miles, they were dead tired. I was achy everywhere. But as soon as I crossed the finish line, I was like, when's the next one? Like, I can do that faster. I know I can do that better next time.
That's the best feeling in the world. And it's the best when you see the race photos and you've never really run a race before and you start to totally comprehend how this happens and they're coming from every angle and they've got like your worst side.
Yeah.
And there's that, like, that one miraculous great photo
in the bank. Yes.
So you run your first marathon and it really catapults you to understanding that you need to make a change for yourself in your professional life.
Yes.
Okay. So you're at Self now.
Yeah.
This is awesome. And soon after, you moved to Chicago.
Yes. Well, I was at Self for a solid 3 years. I started as the editorial assistant in the fitness department. I got promoted a couple of times. When I left, I was doing health and nutrition. So I got a dabble in like all of my favorite content pillars. It was great learning. But yes, then we left it all behind because my longtime boyfriend and at the time fiance, Matt, he got into his dream school, University of Chicago, where he was going to pursue a PhD. And we were recently engaged and like it was just, you know, we wanted to start our lives together. So we moved to Chicago so he could start grad school.
And when you moved to Chicago, you were working for Time Out Chicago.
Yes.
And doing some freelancing.
Yep.
And still running.
Yeah. That was a very active time in my life. Again, you know, moving to a new city, what do? Sign up for a marathon. I immediately was like, okay, I'm going to run the Chicago Marathon soon after we land. And I got into triathlons. I did my first and only half Ironman there and a lot of other triathlons and half marathons. We lived right by Lake Michigan, right by that running and biking path, which is the most amazing thing in the world. So I made a ton of sporty, active friends who loved racing just like me.
Why do you think that is that we lean into, and I say we being I'm the exact same way, we lean into these fit endeavors when we're going through something that's tough?
I think for me personally, it's a bit subconscious. So, you know, at the time I'm not even realizing it, but I think it's to have some sense of control in our lives and to have something that we know brings us so much joy and happiness. Like that feeling that you just went out and did a 10-mile long run or a 15-mile long run or a 100-mile bike ride, whatever it is, it just like lights me up with confidence and strength. And I think when we're lacking in other areas or feel nervous or anxious in other areas of life, that just gives you so much strength and power to have these active accomplishments under your belt.
Would you say that without doing these activities, you feel either more lethargic or more foggy?
Yes, and yes. Don't think I could have said it better. Yeah, I think going for a run, lifting, sweating in any way, shape, or form, to me, like, clears the clouds and the fog. It makes you just, like, sharp and clear and confident.
It's interesting to me because I try to think about what I did before I was a super active human and how I...
Who now works out like 7 hours a day.
So, but like, what was I doing to kind of clear the fog before?
Yeah.
And honestly, I would say that was probably eating.
Yeah.
And so I look back as to how I found comfort and I found comfort in food and to replace that with such a, you know, 180 of a lifestyle change. I can't say enough about it.
So true.
Okay. So you're running a lot. You're in Chicago. Matt's studying for his PhD.
Yep.
You're writing all the things. And the two of you are thinking about trying to start a family.
Yes. So we got married in 2006. We're living the life in Chicago. I was doing my triathlons. He was working hard on his dissertation. We met when we were 18, but we started dating our senior year when we were about 21. So we'd known each other a long time, and we were ready. We were young, but we were ready to start trying to have a family. And it didn't turn out to be so easy for us.
And when you say it wasn't so easy, how long from when you started trying to when? And by the way, Liz has three beautiful children.
Spoiler alert, there's a happy ending. Yeah.
Three beautiful children. Her first two are twins. Yeah. So Charlie and Lucy.
Yeah.
I love their names. How long from start to Charlie and Lucy?
It was, gosh, until we got pregnant, it was almost 2 years from starting to try. You know, so I was doing half Ironman and really exercising a lot and working really hard. And I knew, of course, that that was a strain on the body. So I completely chilled out on that and was like, okay, now I'm just running for fun and for happiness. I'm not training for anything. And Matt and I started trying and I went off birth control and, you know, first month was like, oh, this is going to be great. I'd been on birth control for many years. And at some point my body had like stopped ovulating, which you don't know because, you know, it kind of replicates the cycle when you're on the pill. My cycle never restarted. And I just kept waiting and waiting for it to start. And I was running less and less during this time because I was hearing from every angle, from my mom to my friends to strangers on the street, that it was because I was a runner and I had done this to my body, which was, you know, for something that makes you so happy and that you turn to in times of, you know, troubling times. It was really hard to hear that, one, this could be my fault because I had just loved exercise too much, or two, that I couldn't use that as my solace to get through it.
And what was that like for you mentally? I can't even imagine how dark that must feel to not be able to kind of let go in the way that you release through activity, but then also having such a difficulty losing control with your body.
It was definitely one of the darkest times in my life. When I'm in a tough spot in my life, the answer is let's sign up for a marathon or let's go for a run. And I didn't have that anymore. I would feel guilty if I even ran 3 miles by the lake, even if I was doing it slow and easy. So it was a total perspective shift to think about what are some other healthy releases for me to make me feel normal and like sane during this crazy time that I don't feel like are hurting my body in some way. And I want to be clear that like I don't. Exercise doesn't make you not get pregnant. It was at that time, though, when it's not working and people say all sorts of crazy things to you, you don't know. And you're like, well, maybe that is why. Who knows? And so you don't want to do anything to jeopardize your chances.
So many people, I mean, there's a stance against everything that you could be doing that could be hurting your body. It's like, don't eat cucumbers or something.
Don't eat cucumbers. Something. Don't have a beer at dinner. That's why you're not getting pregnant. Like a million. Yeah, there are a million things. So what, you know, we were trying for almost a year and then went to see doctors and started fertility treatments. I went through a couple of doctors because the first time it, you know, 6 months with one practice, it still wasn't working. And I decided to try another one. And I remember that doctor had such just a healthy stance on exercise. And he was like, if it makes you feel better, then you should 100% be doing it. This is not the reason you're not getting pregnant. And it's not like I signed up for a marathon the day he told me that or anything, but I did feel more comfortable going out for runs and lifting at the gym and doing just the normal things that made me feel like Liz. I remember another thing he said is that I was like, oh, you know, everyone's talking about acupuncture. Should I be going to an acupuncturist? And he was like, sure. Like, honestly, the best part about it is if you believe it's going to help, then it may actually help. But if you prefer getting a massage to getting an acupuncture treatment, I would suggest you do that. So thus began my once a week massages that I was like, hey, Matt, I've got to go spend $100 on a massage. It's for our family starting
for
purposes.
Our family.
That was the best like little span to be able to have that to look forward to every week. And I do think it like relaxed me and made me happy. And it was like this little release and wellness moment and made me feel normal and chill in a way that like I couldn't quite get from my workouts.
The other day I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about the power of manifestation.
Yeah.
Would you say at this time you were consciously trying to manifest this family.
Oh, God, 100%. If I wasn't at work working, it was just kind of always in the back of my brain. It was always there. I wanted to be a mom so badly. I wanted to see Matt be a dad so badly. We just really wanted kiddos.
Did it blow your mind when you found out you were pregnant with twins?
We went through fertility treatments. We didn't have to do IVF. We were like on the verge of starting an IVF cycle. We were doing injectables. And I remember going in and we were like signing the final paperwork to begin the IVF cycle the next day. And my doctor was like, we're finishing up a cycle. And he was like, I'm going to take a blood test while you're here, even though you're early in the, like, it's too early to know. And so I knew because we were taking this medicine that we had a much higher rate for twins. But you never... You don't fully wrap your head around that possibility, I think.
You'd been trying for so long just to have one child.
Totally. So he took the blood test and I found out the next day that I was pregnant, which was, I'm making it sound so chill. It was like the most exciting, just crazy moment of my life. We were going on a trip like about a week later and I was having some weird cramping. And of course, when you try so hard, any little weird twinge is terrifying. And I just wanted to be able to enjoy my trip and hear that everything was okay. So I went in by myself, you know, from my little 6 a.m. ultrasound. They're like so nice. They're like, come see us. We'll check out what's going on. And so they do the ultrasound and they're like, oh, you're having twins. There's another baby. So I don't know if it was Charlie or Lucy who popped up second, but that was crazy because Matt was not with me. So I was just like, what? You know, and your mind had just wrapped itself around one baby. We're having one baby. I kind of freaked out, like mentally. I was like, but I didn't plan on a double jogging stroller. I know the first one I want. I'm kind of being over, you know, exaggerating it a bit. But yeah, it was a surprise. It's much more to push. And I was like, how is Matt going to respond to this? You know, he's an economist. He already had our spreadsheet going of like our little baby budget and all of that. And I was kind of nervous to tell him. And I went home and he was on his computer, probably working on the baby budget. And I went in and told him like something crazy had happened. Everything's okay, but something crazy had happened. And I told him, we're having twins. There's a second baby. And he just like broke into a smile and he was like, that is so awesome. And like gave me a hug.
I'm like crying.
I know. I cry when I think about it because he was just so solid and there was not like any reflection of anxiety or worry or anything on his face. He was just like, we've got this. We can do this. And I'm so happy. I know. He's such a good egg.
Oh my God, love that man. A good egg. The puns. I can't. Okay. So then you're pregnant. What does activity look like for you while you're pregnant?
I was, again, pretty nervous. I didn't want to. Did you just wipe a tear?
Right? I did. Like calling me out for being emotional.
So I was very nervous. I didn't want to do anything to rock the boat or, you know, at the time I was like, if I do too much activity, will it like jostle the baby out of my body? You know, you're in a crazy state. I was doing the elliptical a little bit. And I would say after the first trimester, I got comfortable with lifting weights again, all like with my doctors okay. And yeah, just with their guidance. But they... And I really believe in this, too. They were really strongly advocating to continue my activity level that was, you know, better for the babies and better for me to be strong and healthy and fit.
And how was it? I guess, obviously, you have Charlie and Lucy. How was it the second time around with your third child, George? Did you go through a lot of the same struggles?
No, so that's the exciting thing about George is he was a bit of a surprise, to put it mildly. We were not trying to have another child. We were like so set and happy with Charlie and Lucy. We were good. And then I got a surprise positive pregnancy test. It was a complete shock, crazy shock. And that actually is not George. I ended up miscarrying that baby, which was sad, but it told me and Matt, like, we really want another baby. Turns out, yes, we do want a third child. So then I would say it was not the same, like we didn't go through fertility treatments or anything, but my body was ovulating and everything seemed to be working just in a bit of a wonky way. Mm-hmm. And we got pregnant with George. So he was a surprise, but like a very much wanted surprise.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So where are you? I know you were in Chicago and then at some point over this story, you come back to New York.
Yeah. So we moved back to New York when Charlie and Lucy were 15 months old.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when you moved back to New York, where were you working?
I did a little stint at Canyon Ranch, the wellness brand. They were launching an editorial platform, and they had like 4 remote editors in the New York area. So I was doing that, but I really missed being in an office and with people and collaborating in that way. So I started putting out feelers for magazine jobs when I got back to New York.
And then where did you go?
So I landed at Cosmo with Joanna Coles and Joyce Chang, who you know very well
since
we worked with her itself. Joanna had been the editor-in-chief of Marie Claire, and Hearst had moved her over to run the ship at Cosmo, and she had a vision for adding a lot more health and sexual health content, amongst other things, more career content and political coverage. And so I was brought in with Sarah Austin to build out the health content for the magazine.
And that was Cosmo Body, right?
That came later. That came about a year into my stint. I was working solely on the magazine, and then Hearst Digital Media had this idea that they hatched with Joanna to start a streaming fitness channel, way ahead of its time, in fact. And as the person who oversaw all the fitness content and as a certified personal trainer, I was brought into those conversations and ended up working a lot on that project.
What's it like working with Joanna Coles?
It's hard to describe in words how amazing she is. She's a force of nature. She's a brilliant woman. And I learned so much about how I like to manage people and what kind of leader inspires me from her. And like a lot of how I lead my team and work with people is because of what I learned from her.
I'm curious, what's one of the most valuable pieces of advice that you've ever received from one of your mentors?
The most valuable piece of advice, I would say something that Joyce Chang taught me is you never, ever say no to the meeting or the conversation. And that's honestly how I have the job that I have today. I was working at Well and Good, the digital lifestyle and wellness brand, and really happy and learning a lot and loving my team there. And Hearst reached out and it was like, you know, I was early days at Well and Good, but you never say no to the conversation. And it really opened up this whole new world and like the happiest I've ever been professionally.
Taking a break from today's episode to give the sponsor, Altra, a little bit of love. I am so, so, so happy that it's finally nice out, which means that now is as good of a time as any to get outdoors and get active. One of my favorite things to do in the summer months is trail running, and Altra's got a great new shoe, perfect for scenic miles, called the Superior 3.5. Complete with a tech they call Stone Guard, the sneaker offers flexible protection from whatever rugged terrain brings your way by deflecting rocks into the midsole for a smooth, stable ride. Head on over to ultrarunning.com. That's ALTRARunning.com to snag yourself a pair today. And with that, let's get back to it. I'm back here with Liz Plosser, the editor-in-chief of Women's Health Magazine, the bomb. What I'd love to kind of do right now with you is talk about, it's so interesting to me because we have this shared passion for running. And when I think about running and I think about the accomplishments that I've made or I've had running, I realize in those moments of hardship that I can really do anything. And so for you, that experience working so diligently to conceive,
yeah,
would you say that that has instilled in you this same passion that you can do anything?
Yeah, I think it's super interesting how many parallels there are to running and like the dark places you go when you're running and you come out on the other side in some way, you find a way to get to the finish line. What I learned from going through those fertility issues is to have so much compassion for what human beings are going through kind of privately and secretly. There's this quote circulating probably on Instagram, and it's something like, I never lose, I either win or I learn. And I just love that idea that even for reasons that are out of our control, like my body not conceiving or a magazine folding like you went through itself, you still can learn from those experiences. It's not a loss. You know, you're going to take something away from that. And I think it builds you up to be a bigger, better person.
something I want to touch on that you brought up. You never know what somebody else is going through. Yeah. It's been something I've thought a lot about, especially over the past year when I interact with anyone. Even if I have some sort of MO when I shoot you a message, if it's a text or an email, it's never jumping right to the point.
Yeah.
Because even if it's a text message, you have no idea what that person's going through on that particular day. So to just jump in and be like, hey, I have this thing I need from you. Like, what if, I don't know, they woke up on the wrong side of the bed and they're going through a breakup and you have no idea or what have you?
I think that's awesome. I could be better about that, but I think that's such a great point. No, seriously. When you text me, you are very much like that. You kind of do a little check-in and like, how are we feeling today? How's it going?
Because
I love that.
Well, there might be something else going on that like we should probably talk about before I get to whatever I wanted to bring up in the first place.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome. This also reminds me of a question that I love to ask about your favorite failure.
My favorite failure. I mean, I guess I would say my favorite failure is that it was hard to conceive. Again, I wouldn't change it. It's weird to use the word favorite for it because it was really like such a tough time in my life. But when you're on the other side of it, the retrospect that you have, I'm grateful for the experience.
I feel like that's how a lot of us feel about the things that feel like missteps in our lives.
Yeah.
Whether, again, it's something like you went through or a career misstep or a relationship misstep. It's so difficult in the moment. And so often you're like, why me? Why me?
Yeah.
But then you look back on it a month, 6 months, a year, 5, 10 years later, and you're like, this shaped me to be who I am right now. And that's so powerful.
So true. I think it's like the power of zigzagging at the time. You just want to like stay on that straight trajectory and like go where your eyes were set. And it's okay to zigzag off the path. In fact, that makes you might like jump ahead on the path or find a new path.
I want to pivot a little bit because I'm sure a lot of people listening to this podcast are interested because you're the editor-in-chief of Women's Health and that it's something they may aspire to do one day. What is a story from your career that you love to tell?
Okay. I'll tell one about when I got my job at the job at Cosmo working for Joanna. I'd been interviewing for it and I was like close, you know, if I could just nail this interview with the editor-in-chief, then I was probably going to get the job offer. And so my final round interview was set with her in, I guess it was early, very early November of 2014. Yeah, 13. Sorry, 2013. Whenever Hurricane Sandy was. So the interview with Joanna Coles was set for 2 days after Hurricane Sandy. And if you remember, were you in the city then?
I was.
Yeah. The city was like shut down.
It was. Thankfully, I was on the Upper East Side. I felt like we were like minimally affected.
Yeah.
But everyone migrated there.
Everyone migrated.
The Upper East Side was like Midtown and like all of the restaurants were booked.
Hotels, restaurants, all of it. Well, I live in Park Slope. So fortunately, we didn't lose power or anything, but none of the subways were running into the city. My interview with her was at, I want to say, 2 p.m, but I didn't know how long it would take to get there. I woke up at probably 4:30 in the morning to first of all go for a run because I needed to get my head straight and like
obviously
clear and confident and strong for the conversation ahead. And then got into my little outfit and got myself to the end of the Brooklyn Bridge where buses were taking you across into the city. And I didn't know if it was going to take hours to do that. So I think just the fact that I would have done anything. Like, it was an 8-mile run to Hearst Tower. I was fully prepared to put on my sneakers and run with my backpack in my little leather dress and, like, run myself there and change.
You're not wearing a pinstripe suit anymore.
I figured out what to wear for interviews at this point. And I didn't make a thing about it when I talked to her. You know, it was just like, of course I'm going to get to the interview. But at some point in the conversation, she kind of recognized that she was like, where do you live? I live in Brooklyn. And she was like, oh, was that tough to get here today? And so I told her what I'd done, that I'd started my journey at about 6:15 a.m. for this 2 p.m. interview in Midtown or in Columbus Circle. And I think at that moment she was like, okay, this I'm going to hire this girl. I hope that was the moment that she felt that way. So I think just hard work, you know, it means many different things, including getting yourself to the interview right on time.
Were you in Manhattan proper for about 5 hours before you had this meeting?
Oh my gosh. It turned out to not take the 6 hours I'd budgeted to get into the city. So I was like, huh, now what? So I definitely camped out at a Starbucks in my dress, just like, you know, working on my laptop and counting down the hours till I went to meet with her.
Do you have a favorite article or feature that you have edited?
This is going back to my Cosmo days again. This was like such a career highlight. We put together a package. The irony of it. The package was called How Not to Get Pregnant. And it was a big 12-page feature. We assigned it to Kelly Mickle, who's an amazing writer in California. And it was this huge collaborative effort between our art team, our photo team, our editors, just the number of people at Cosmo who worked on that package is staggering. And it went on to win the brand's first ever National Magazine Award. And it was just like a huge career highlight, not only because it was great content and I think information that our demographic really needed, but also to be recognized by your peers and to feel like your team was recognized for all their hard work. It was pretty awesome.
What's a piece of advice you would give to someone who's starting a career in journalism today? I think it's scary now. I think about, you know, even I graduated college in 2010, and I think about the classes that I took, and if I went back to college right now, I am so sure I would have taken so many classes that weren't even offered at the time about digital, social media.
Yeah, it is. It's a turbulent time, to put it mildly, in publishing. But I think what you said is exactly right. Just because you're not in college doesn't mean you can't learn that stuff and you can't take those classes. So I would encourage aspiring journalists, one, to like be open to any opportunity their position offers them. If you're working on the print side, but you have a chance to do an Instagram takeover or write a story for the website or just take, you know, somebody from the digital team out to coffee, you should 100% do that. And then take classes on your own free time that are interesting to you, that you feel like expand your skill set. I think that's really important.
Talk to me a little bit about getting informational meetings. Someone asked me that yesterday about my thoughts on if they should reach out to someone at XYZ brand. And I remember when I was in college, I emailed Marty Munson, who used to be the digital director at Shape.
Yep.
When I was a junior in college, completely blindly. And I said, I'm going to be in the city on Tuesday. Lie. Can I come and like ask you a few questions? And I was so shocked that she said yes.
Yeah. Oh, I love Marty. She's a good one.
My first like venture into any actual magazine building before I got my internship at Fitness.
And I think, why not? You know, I think I get those emails and I try to take coffees when I can. It's harder and harder. But I remember being that girl, that investment banker who was trying to like get in front of anyone to prove to them that I had a passion for this. And the people that said yes are like, you know, forever in my heart. And I want to like pay it forward to everybody else. So I say go for it. To anybody listening who is blind emailing someone for an informational meeting, what's the worst that can happen?
What's like a best practice tip to get that meeting, though? Because I feel like there's good ways to go about it and awful ways to go about it.
I think what you did was good. You're like, you had a specific time in mind. Probably you put a sentence on that's like, or if another time works better for you, great. I think setting it up with some acknowledgement that like you're familiar with the brand or the person, that you're not just emailing 700 different editors today, but you've chosen Emily for a specific reason. I think that's a good way to kick it off.
When you think about the immediate and maybe not so immediate future for women's health, what do you see exciting things coming down the pipeline for your brand?
Well, I think since we're now under the Hearst umbrella, it's a hugely exciting time because we have that engine behind us. One of the powerful things about our brand is that we're a global brand. You know, we have 29 international editions, and I think there's some really exciting ways we can work together and collaborate that haven't really been tapped in the past. And then I'm also really excited to develop more of a relationship with our brother brand in men's health. I think having these two sibling brands that reach so many millions of women and men, we have an incredible opportunity to like amplify our power together. So those are some things I'm excited to get into.
What is a book that you love to give people?
A subscription to Women's Health. I have to say that. Honestly, my mom has given that gift to like every girlfriend she has and my sister too. So thanks, Mom and Kate. And I do it too to my friends. But a book. I love The Happiness Project by Gretchen Rubin. She's a fellow Kansas Cityan. So she has a great podcast and email newsletter. And I just think her life advice is so smart and conversational and actually like you can put it into action immediately. So I love that. And then for my running friends, I love the book. What I think about when I talk about running.
I think that's it. I read it recently. What I think about when I talk about running. What I talk about when I think about.
Yes.
I just read that.
It's like poetry on running. I just get lost in it. I think it's so beautiful how he talks about running and like it meanders and goes all over the place, which is kind of what your brain does while you're running in a really good way. So I just think it's a beautiful book. I remember I gave that to my dad for Father's Day a couple years ago.
You ran the Brooklyn Half Marathon last weekend.
I did.
How was that?
It was awesome. It was rainy and windy and the weather was blah, but that kind of made it more fun. It was not as bad as when you ran Boston, though. Girl, I was awful. Thinking of you at the start line. I was like, this is a fraction of what the poor Boston marathoners dealt with. And the worst part was waiting for it to start, right? And you guys were out there for hours waiting.
We were under. I didn't know there was going to be tents for us. I just kind of prepared for it to be the absolute worst. And I'd be there with my umbrella and the two trash bags over my feet and the poncho. Ugh. And thankfully, there was a tent. But the tent was just like on a sea of mud. So you just stood there the entire time praying that the mud didn't infiltrate the two-bag sneaker system. It sucked. But yeah. Better for it.
Better for it. I feel like so proud of myself that I ran hard on a really wet, crummy day. It's funny. I ran with two girlfriends and one of them a couple days before the race started texting that she had a goal time in mind, which I had no business going for. I had done plenty of long runs, but for me, the game changer is speed work, which I had done literally zero interval training for this race. So I was like, ooh, I don't know about that. But we just kind of went for it from the get-go, and there were some dark miles, but we met our time goal. So we were thrilled. We were three mamas, like, celebrating with a Brooklyn beer at the Coney Island finish line.
Liz has said a lot of outstanding things to me, but something she said to me over dinner the other day was her theory that everyone has, like, three goals. You've got a goal that you put out into the world. A goal that you tell, like, the people that are really close to you.
Right.
And then a goal that, like, you're not really going to tell anyone, but, like, this is exactly what I really want to do in this race.
Do you agree with this?
I don't know if I have three. I think I probably have two.
Did you have two for Boston before you knew what the weather was going to be?
Before I knew what the weather was going to be,
I feel like you put something out into social media, like, I'm going to run under 4 hours.
What I put out into social media was that I really wanted to PR, and then when the weather
That's
got
bad.
That's
a big thing to put out there. Did you feel pressure when you did that?
It's so interesting, actually, because when I PR'd my marathon time, it was completely unplanned. It was my first New York City marathon. I ran it in 3:51:41.
That wasn't after you ran Dublin, was it?
No, okay. That was the year before. Liz is referencing when I ran the New York City
marathon.
We know
way too much about each other.
5 days after I ran the Dublin, Ireland marathon. But when I PR'd, it was just so unexpected, but it makes me think of when you were saying that you were smiling ear to ear that entire first race in Vermont. For me, that New York City Marathon was the most amazing, best day of my life. I look back on it. I did a video series for a job at the time, and I watch that video sporadically like two or three times a year, and I cry every time.
I cry when I see that video. I have goosebumps even hearing you talk about it.
But yeah. I was doing a ton of speed work going into Boston, and I was really like working to PR. Again, we all go through dark times in our life. I was dealing with some stuff on a personal level, and I just felt like I was in the right place to work my butt off.
You were in it.
And so when the weather changed, I felt like I needed to set like a new realistic expectation, not just for myself, but then like also on social.
Yeah.
This is the real deal. This is what tomorrow is going to be like. The winds are going to be up to 50 miles an hour or something. And I'm just going to go out there and give it my best.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think our hurdle moments help us to do that. They help us remember that, you know, this is how it is now and we're going to go forward and we're going to give it our all, and that giving your all is truly good enough.
I think that is so true. And I think what's remarkable is, like, you could have decided to not run Boston. You could have picked another spring marathon because you were in the shape of your life and ready to go out and just destroy that race course. But you said you were going to run Boston, and you ran Boston, and you went and gave it 110%. And you ran an awesome race. I cannot believe how fast you ran into those wins.
Oh, my God.
But now I do want you to do another marathon so you can see how speedy you really can be.
I need to chill. My hip is like sporadic sciatica. This is 30. Yeah. Next week. One last question. If you could offer one piece of advice to yourself when you're going through those fertility struggles, what words of wisdom would you give that girl?
I think what I would tell her is that life never goes exactly as you imagine it in your brain, and that's okay. That's like the beauty of it. That the zigzagging off your course is where magical things happen. And for me, that was Charlie and Lucy. I would never have these two beautiful boy-girl twins if I hadn't zigzagged into fertility darkness. And that's really hard to think about in the moment, but it's something that I've taken from that experience and that I try to remember when my life zigzags, as it continues to do and everybody's does.
That's amazing. What a positive note to end on, Liz. I wish we could do this every
week. I know. Can we start every morning with coffee and ketchup? This is the best.
Oh my God. It's going to be like a new daily podcast series. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me, Em.
Please take a moment to leave a quick review by clicking the link with the description to this episode. We all face multiple hurdles in life. I want to hear about yours. Reach out to me at emily@hurdle.us. Connect with the podcast on Instagram and Twitter @hurdlepodcast. Liz, where do we find you? Where do we find Women's Health?
Yeah, come find me on my Instagram @LizPlosser. And you can follow Women's Health at Women's Health Mag and also at womenshealthmag.com.
Awesome. I am @EmilyAbadi. Another hurdle conquered. Yes. Catch you guys next time.